We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
They also have great size, and that's the more traditional way that teams have been built around the NBA. It doesn't mean that that's going to be enough to win it all, but it can be a pathway to success. Well, if their guards aren't shooting it well, they have an option down low. They can work through the post. Houston, it is about ball movement, and if it's a hot shooting night, they could put up 145 points, and that's wonderful. But they can't do it every single night. Don Nelson was an innovator, and I have a lot of respect for what he meant to the game, and a lot of respect even watching the HBO piece that was done on him recently, how he's leading his life, and he's just a really interesting dude. Mike D'Antoni is also an innovator. I give him a great deal of credit for changing the way that we viewed the NBA. The pace that he wanted to play with in Phoenix, he's carried it over now in a couple of different stops. You talk to any of the coaches, they'll tell you that he is among the more interesting guys philosophically about the game. I just think there are limitations with this current style and whether or not it can carry over to a championship. Is it potentially fun? Yeah, if they're making shots from a play-by-play man's point of view, you're calling make after make after make, bombs away for James Harden, Russell Westbrook attacking the rim. Yeah, it can be fun. I just don't know if you can win a championship doing it that way. And ultimately, that's the goal for every team.
Which team has surprised you the most in the bubble, good or bad?
Good. Obviously, Phoenix is undefeated, and Devin Booker's just on one of those runs right now, individual runs. And what's really interesting about it is, let's say the Suns didn't qualify for the bubble and their season was over. I think there would have been a lot of scuttlebutt about Booker wanting to get out of there and get himself to a winning situation or get himself with some other elite players. And now, we don't know, there's still five games left for them. Now there might be a general feeling that this could work, that maybe they do have some of the pieces, and maybe there is chemistry forming there in Phoenix. So this could turn out to be a very important time and stretch for the Suns organization and for Booker individually. T.J. Warren has been the MVP of the bubble. It's ridiculous. The guy does not miss. He's a former Sun, now with the Pacers, and he's just shouldered so much of the load for Indiana. I don't think people were looking at the Pacers as a serious factor in the Eastern Conference, but all of a sudden, with this guy shooting it the way that he has, Oladipo coming back, maybe Indiana can have something to say in what is probably deemed a wide-open Eastern Conference. Milwaukee has been underwhelming, and that might be by design, that Budenholzer is looking at this a different way. I really like their team. I really like the way they play. I like the way that they got after it defensively this year. Brook Lopez has become an outstanding defensive player. This is a guy that I saw play for the Nets for 10 years. And if you would have told me that he had a chance to be a first All-NBA defender at any point in his career, I would have called you a madman. But he's been great defensively. He's bought in completely. Miami's an intriguing team. I don't know what's going on with Jimmy Butler right now. But if they can get it straight, they might be one of the surprises in the Eastern Conference in the bubble. And then in the West, with LeBron and the Lakers, everyone is going to be talking about it, and rightfully so. You know, look, I think part of the reason why the NBA is doing this, there are a number of reasons, the money involved with the network television money, also that they wanted to crown a champion, and they wanted to give LeBron a chance to win a championship. And if they just pulled the plug on the season, then it would have gone up in smoke, and now LeBron is going to get that opportunity. Clippers are really deep, still need to get some pieces back, Montrezl Harrell in particular. But if you're asking me who's the most complete team in the NBA right now, I would say the L.A. Clippers are top to bottom.
For what it's worth, Ian Eagle, I mentioned that you're my favorite basketball announcer. I'm guessing that your favorite is the kid who does Clipper games, Noah Eagle. Yeah, I wanted to ask you how proud you are to have a son who's also doing NBA games. What can you share with us about whether you guys have tips for each other? Does he ask you, Dad, what'd you think of this call? I mean, you must be very proud of that.
Oh, beyond proud. It's the ultimate compliment. If your child is even interested in what you do for a living, and then it's a whole nother level if they decide that they want to pursue it and then actually have some success. So whatever professional accomplishments I've had on a personal level pale in comparison to what I'm experiencing as a dad and listening to him. And our relationship now has this whole other layer of conversations from his first year doing this and things that, you know, I really couldn't talk about with other members of my family. They weren't that interested in the press food in San Antonio. Like, that's not a hot topic at the dinner table. Well, all of a sudden now I can actually talk to somebody in my family about that because they can relate. Now, it's been awesome. It really has. And he's handled it incredibly well. This has been a really challenging situation for all broadcasters. All of the local broadcasters that are doing it now remotely. For him, what I've told him is, you're never going to face anything like this again. Anything that you have to actually deal with in your career beyond this will just seem very minuscule and minute compared to this situation. So to me, he's never going to feel overwhelmed. He's fully prepared for anything that comes his way.
But is this kind of a thing like playing basketball on an outdoor hoop in your driveway where the first time he beats you, all of a sudden you have to start getting to be the old man and foul him more and
right.
You know, start shoving him into the rose bushes?
Yes. I pull his mic cord. Yes. I see where you're going with this. You know, it's funny. People just assume, like, wow, did you guys just do play-by-play around the house? And that really was not the case. We were not crazy people. We're not insane people. It's not like my wife was making dinner and my son was like, oh, Brent, the mashed potatoes are here! Macaroni and cheese! Like, that was not happening in our household. It was a little more serene than that. And when he indicated to me when he was 13, 14 years old that he really wanted to pursue this and saw this as a career option, all I could really do was offer up advice and invite him along, which he had already been doing. But I just said, hey, if you can come with me and it doesn't affect school and it doesn't affect your social life, you should be a fly on the wall. By osmosis, you're going to pick some things up. Just sit there, take it all in. And he did, to his credit. He really did. That to me was the most important part, that he was around it, and it didn't seem unattainable because he saw it. He saw it from a perspective that, oh, this is something that I could actually do, and I could make a career out of it. So it's been really cool.
Well, that's some good parenting right there. Ian Eagle, thank you so much for your time, sir. Stay safe. When do we get to see you again on TNT?
Yes, tomorrow night, Dallas Mavericks, L.A. Clippers. It's the start of a long stretch of games for me. I have another game on Friday night for TNT. I'm doing two games for TNT on Saturday, and then I've got a net game against the Clippers on Sunday for the local package. So busy times inside the bubble, and looking forward to it. It really has been a lot of fun, I must say that.
Well, we've had fun catching up. Thank you, Ian. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Anytime.
Take care. Ian Eagle, NBA on TNT. Have you guys heard Noah Eagle at all doing Clipper games?
I've heard him a little bit on Sirius because they carry every game. He's okay. I mean, I think he's got to grow into it. No, well, I mean, he's basically, I mean, he's a child doing this. He's just started.
He's
and you
kid.
Can
yeah.
tell. I mean, I'm not going to blow smoke up his skirt because he's Ian Eagle's kid. I mean,
he's younger than Nash.
Well, yeah. he's better than
Pretty
Nash.
Close. I don't know his exact birthday. We might be the same age. I'd say he's having a better career than me.
Nash, there are people sleeping under dumpsters that are having a better career than you.
You too.
But, yeah. No, I know. I'm hateful, but I'm near death, so it doesn't matter anymore. No, I think you could see where there's avenues of growth. And if the Clippers don't do what teams do way too often now and change their announcers every 5 years, I think he'll grow into it and he'll like it. And when I say like it, I mean he'll like the sound of his own voice better. He won't be as hesitant. I mean, you know, I'm sounding like his father now, which is a disgrace. But no, I think he's got game. It just you have to do it repetitively to find out how good he is. I mean, Bill King at 25 wasn't nearly as good as he was at age 30.
It's just, gotcha. Just you talked your way all the way around that question. Well, fair enough. Fair enough. Hey, we have Farhan Zaidi coming up today at 5. You got a question you want us to ask Farhan, 888-957-9570. Whitey in for Damon today. Coming up, the 49ers lose one pass catcher, but they are getting another. That's next. Damon Radokolsky. Whitey in for Damon, 95.7 The Game.
And Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Whitey in for Damon today. Thanks for being with us. We've got Farhan Zaidi, Giants President of Baseball Operations, coming up at 5. We just talked with Ian Eagle, NBA on TNT, and we were talking to Ian, among other things, about the NBA restart. Why have the games been so watchable? And I know one theory is that the bad teams are gone. You just have the best teams playing. That makes some sense, but I'm watching right now. I got the Sixers and the Wizards on.
Yep.
We got a
pretty
cracker jack of a contest.
Yep.
I'm telling you, it's 97-90. You guys, your feed may be a little more current than mine. The Wizards, there's just no quit in these Washington Wizards. So I don't think it's just a matter of only the best teams being there. And I know Washington hasn't always played well in the bubble. You know, when you watch... But they're playing well. It's a watchable game is my point. This game is watchable. Yeah, they're not a good team. So just the theory that the games are better because the teams are good, well, then why is this Wizards game watchable? If you watch a college game during the season, if you got college and the NBA going on simultaneously, typically you turn on a college game, you can tell it's college just by the energy level, just by the amount of effort that's being exerted, if you will. And to me, the players are playing harder than they typically do. They're exerting more energy. I don't know if that's because they've had, you know, never before have we seen NBA players with this long break, essentially towards the end of their season, but during their season. I think that has a lot to do with it. Obviously, that's a little vague, and I don't know if there are any numbers that reflect that, but just to my eye, everybody seems to be exerting more energy. It's still sloppy, but they're playing hard.
I'm always loath to say that, and I don't know that I necessarily believe that. I certainly can say I don't believe that about the college game at all, and I think the main reason
it's 100%
you can
true
tell
because
the
they play fewer games.
I just don't think it's true. The main difference I can see when I turn those two things on is one of them has a professional skill level and the other doesn't.
I agree.
I do think it's been a little higher paced and frankly higher pitched. I do think that there's been a little more intensity than, say, the average mid-season regular season game. But I don't know that that's uncommon to games down the stretch where teams are jockeying for seeding. It's certainly not uncommon to playoff games. So I don't know that I would say guys are playing harder because they're in the bubble. I do think guys might be fresher because of the time off.
Yeah, I think the pace, I tend to agree with Matt here. I think the pace is a little higher, but it's also sloppier. And I have a feeling that if there is a difference, it's that teams down the stretch normally, if they're playing another team sort of in their strength group, are going to be more careful with the basketball and more measured. I mean, I'm not kidding. There are like five or six more threes per team per game. I mean, there are teams jacking up shots that they would not jack up under normal, you know, pre-playoff standings jockeying times. They are playing differently. And I think that colors some of it because, you know, again, they're averaging more than 70 a game when you combine the two teams in any game.
Why do you think that is?
I think there are teams that have nothing to lose, like Washington. There are teams now like Utah and Houston who have decided to embrace the style. And everywhere else, I think there's just sort of this less structured feel to it. I don't think the games are coached the way they would be under normal circumstances. And I don't know why that is. But there are guys taking threes that shouldn't be taking threes that suddenly have the green light to. And I'm not sure why that is. But you have to be able to account for the increased number of threes somehow.
Yeah.
And well, given who's taking them and how often they're taking them, I kind of feel that the games are being decided tactically in a different way, and I can't really get a feel on it yet, and I might have to become Zach Lowe to do it, but I just don't want to break down that much tape.
I don't disagree. I think, and by the way, if the players are fresher, we're kind of saying the same thing, but agree to disagree on the amount of energy exerted. I will say, I just want to make clear, when I say that to me, during the college season, players play harder. In no way am I criticizing NBA players for being lazy. I think college players, they have to play harder because they're not as good, but also playing fewer games. To my eye, there are times when you see like a college team press for 40 minutes, which you would never see in the NBA level because they play 82 games. But to my eye, Ray, I think there are, again, I don't have any numbers to back this up, but listening to you talk, I think there are more threes available. I don't know if the perimeter defense, for whatever reason, is not quite right now what it's going to be, what it's been during the regular year. Of course, the game is just trending that way, but I think there are more threes available, and teams are taking advantage of that. Maybe they shouldn't, to your point about guys shooting threes, it shouldn't, but I think there are more perimeter threes available right now for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know that you have to account for a difference of 10 per game. Because that's a huge jump. I mean, this game here, Philly-Washington, it's going to be the first one that's barely going to get that will just get over 50 tries from three. In fact, it may not even get to that because there's only 50 seconds left and they haven't shot 50 threes yet. But that's not an abnormal number in a normal game, and it's 20 below the average in the bubble. So I'm at a loss to explain why. I just note that there's a difference, and it's a pretty sizable one.
That's the noteworthy thing to me. I mean, in this small sample size, if we were talking about there's two or three more threes per game, I'd say that's just a quirk. 10 is a huge number. Huge. And that does indicate something is happening. But, you know, I tend to agree with you, Whitey, that it doesn't, to watch the games, and I have watched a whole lot of them, it doesn't seem like guys are taking crazier threes than
forcing.
Normal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the text line here, 888-957-9570. Ray, I know you don't want to comment until you hear what the smartest listeners in radio have to say about it.
Damn right.
From the 415, if you had a four-month vacation, you'd have energy too. From a four-month vacation. That'd be nice. From the 510, it's nice not to have the cameraman underneath the basket. I think you had mentioned that earlier today, perhaps off the air, Matt. That's interesting. You look at the old NBA film, you know, in the 70s, and they didn't let anyone sit down there because it was dangerous. And now the NBA
still is.
You practically have people sitting on the court. So, yeah, maybe I don't know if that's contributing to what we're seeing from the players, but I'm sure they appreciate not having people sitting right there under the basket.
I do think it makes guys willing to go to the rim with a little more reckless abandon. I really do.
Yeah, I don't know because, you know, 30 years ago, the cameras were way too bulky to do a lot of handhelds under the basket. They just didn't do it. And they really didn't have a use for it because they didn't have the capability for multiple replays the way they do now. As for now, let me assure you, those cameras will be back next year.
Oh, of course they.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Of course.
And,
of course.
And if players are playing with more abandon going to the basket, I mean, I don't know that the numbers necessarily bear that out one way or the other because I haven't looked. But if that's the case, that may also explain why there are approximately 8 more fouls called a game.
Yeah, because that could be part
of it.
Because
there have been more active whistles, and I don't think the games have necessarily been called differently. I just think that, you know, it might be that, you know, teams willing to shoot more than usual creates more fouls, and more misses creates more rebounding fouls. So I think that might be the reason for that.
It's possible. It's certainly a possibility. There's any number of reasons we could be getting more foul calls. It's so hard to isolate that. I do think it's not just the camera people, even the stanchions further back. So there's a lot more room under the basket, and I think that's got to have a psychological effect when guys go to the basket, or even like baseline passes. I feel like we've seen more of, and again, I could be projecting some of this, but. I like the open space around the court, even though I know every dollar of real estate will be taken back up when people are allowed back in stadiums.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just about having the cameras there and the more mobile cameras. It's about selling those spots and selling those seats.
Cash money,
yeah,
baby.
Selling that real estate. That's what it's all about. We'll circle back to the NBA and all the whistles, which apparently we're also seeing in the NHL. We'll get to that here. Damon Radokolsky, Whitey in for Damon on 95.7 The Game. I wanted to touch on the 49ers quickly. I mentioned they're losing a pass catcher. A couple days ago, John Lynch said, as far as I know, no one is opting out, which I'm sure was true. The 49ers did find out that Travis Benjamin has opted out, wide receiver Travis Benjamin. So that may leave them, well, if not thin, they're a little thinner than they were expecting to be. We'll see how that plays out. But this is exciting to me. I know we've been talking about this on and on all offseason. He's not a wide receiver, but Jimmy Garoppolo has been talking about how excited he is to have Jerick McKinnon back as a pass-catching option. What a great comeback story this would be if the 49ers get anything out of Jerick McKinnon.
Define anything, because if he stays healthy, I think the fact that they have held on to him through two injury years tells me they're going to use him, and this is a relative term, but they're going to use him a lot by their standards, because to carry a guy for 2 years in the NFL, unless it's a genuine superstar, is almost unheard of. Those guys get drummed out of the league pretty quickly. So Kyle Shanahan has a belief in him that transcends normal coachly general managing behavior. So if he can go, I think you'll see him a lot.
Yeah, I tend to agree, especially you're talking about losing Travis Benjamin, which frankly, I mean, I don't think that's a big loss. I don't know that he was going to make the regular season roster anyway, but that's a guy who can play wide receiver. I mean, that's the whole deal. If you got two other running backs and you need some help at wide receiver, Jerick McKinnon's supposed to be able to do that. Run a slot route, you know, split out wide even. So I agree with Ray. I think he could end up getting a lot of snaps if he does, in fact, manage to stay healthy for the first time in his 49ers career.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I look forward to that. I hope that's the case. If I was, it seemed to imply that I don't think he's going to contribute. I didn't mean to do that. I just think it would be a tremendous comeback story,
given
how severely he injured his knee and how long he's been out, Ray.
Yeah, I think he's going to spend a lot of time as a running back, but, you know, running pass routes out of there. I don't think they're going to do a lot of, you know, putting him out on the flank, because I think they still view him as primarily a running back, and Kyle Shanahan likes to have three of them. And now that Matt Breida's not there anymore, somebody's got to be that third. And I think because Kyle Shanahan does his running game in bulk, you know, Jerick McKinnon may catch 45 or 50 passes, but I think it'll be out of running back sets. And I think they're comfortable with him there because I think they still view him as primarily a running back.
Yeah,
they
and what they like
at all times.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things they like to do is take running backs and move them out of the backfield on certain plays. And I think that's why Kyle Shanahan was initially attracted to McKinnon, right? Is he felt like he would be the right guy to handle all the different movement around the formation that he likes to engage in.
Yeah, in 2017, McKinnon with the Vikings caught 51 passes for 2 scores, 421 yards. I'll tell you, to be honest, I thought that Coleman was going to catch many more passes last year. I think he ended up, well, I was going to say he caught 20-something. I have to double-check. I thought he was going to catch a lot more passes. So that obviously will be. Yeah, I know. He had a high ankle sprain, and a lot of people look at his yards per carry. He played hurt a lot last year. So we know that Raheem Mostert today made it clear he's the starting running back. Had an interesting press conference from him. He talked about how difficult it was to decide to play during these COVID times, but he's going to do that. So nice to see that they've got everything straightened out there. Do you guys have any sense of how long it's going to take here before the 49ers are able to settle things with you-know-who, Mr. Kittle?
I think the fact that it's taken this long makes me start to wonder if they might not take this to in season, which I know Kittle doesn't want, but his agent has nothing but free time. So when a player says, I don't want to be bothered with this during the season, I mean, it leaves the impression that somehow he's going to be in all these calls. And I have a feeling that he's going to be in almost none of the calls. And I don't see that the 49ers either find this something they have to do quickly or that they are, you know, I don't think they feel the same clock that we seem to think they do.
Boy, that could all be right. They don't seem to feel the same clock. A couple things, though. One, I believe it was Kyle Shanahan that we had the audio from yesterday saying, hey, you know, it was good to actually talk to George, and I do think something will get done soon. And the last time someone said something was going to get done soon, John Lynch's deal was done like 3 days later. So if you're looking for encouraging signs, that would be the one I'd look at. But the other side of it is, I get it if you don't feel a clock. You know, he's on the team. He's under contract this season. But I guess I would just point to all the goodwill you have in general right now if you're the 49ers and the front office and ownership, and also all the goodwill and relationship you have with George Kittle. And I would say to you, if ultimately you're basically going to pay the guy whatever he wants because you need him on your team, just do it. Mm-hmm. Why even risk bad feelings? I understand bad feelings don't necessarily ruin everything, but you got great feelings right now, so why mess with it?
Yeah, if I were his agent, and again, full disclosure, I'm not, but if I were his agent, I would say, look, George, yeah, I just think, you know, that's how I roll. Anything under 15, we're not even talking about that. But I agree with you, Matt. I think it behooves the 49ers to get this taken care of, even if that means they're going to have to feel a little pain over what they got to end up paying him. He's too important.
Listen, we've seen a million situations where it looks like a team is going to be cap strangled. And every year, every team gets under the cap. They'll figure it out. What I think their concern is probably not so much the dollars per year as much as it is the term. And the reason why I say that is because, and Bill Barnwell pointed this out today, is that tight ends have a relatively short shelf life at the top of their game. And the way Kittle plays, there may be some hesitation among the 49ers brass about how long they want to go with a guy who treats his body that recklessly. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but he's a guy who seeks out contact in ways that most pass-catching tight ends really don't. And so I wonder if the issue isn't so much the money as the length of the deal and the length of guarantees in the deal.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to hope he's more Antonio Gates than Rob Gronkowski. I mean, it's tough. But you're right. Most top tight ends don't last that long at the top of their game. So it's a risk. I just think, you know, sometimes you got to pay a guy longer than you want to get what yep. you do want from him now.
I agree. I think that's where they are right now. But they may be at the crossroads as an organization with this George Kittle situation. Speaking of football players from the Big Ten today joining Pac-12 players in publishing a list of demands related to their safety during the pandemic, along with what they call other platforms for change. You can look up exactly what their demands are if you care to, of course, on the internet. But I bring this up to ask both of you. My answer is I don't see how they're going to. Are we going to have a college football season, which to me is very difficult to imagine right now, in 2020?
Well, on the other hand, and Nash just put this in my ear, I think he said 8 UCLA players just tested positive for COVID. Hmm. So given the fact that one of the things that has the players most agitated, other than the social justice aspects, is their safety. And we've seen enough examples in other places where coaches don't much give a damn about their safety. And I think this will just remind guys in the Pac-12 who maybe have been on the fence about this that, you know, the virus is everywhere. It's just everywhere. And the question has to stop being about how you got it and has to start being, how do you deal with it? You know, how will you be protected from the non-health issues to the extent that a school can do that? And this is one of the reasons why the Pac-12 players have been so strident about this and why the Big Ten has now essentially joined them. They have nearly 1,000 players, I think, that signed on to this. Players are no longer accepting the word of their coaches or athletic directors at face value. And this is right now where the rubber is meeting the road, because we are rapidly approaching the point where college conferences have to decide if they're going to play at all, because it looks worse and worse with every passing day.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Okay, back.
Oh, Whitey. Welcome Hello. Back, buddy. I was about
Thank
to start
you.
The segment. I just got a text that says lost audio and right now. But you're here.
I apologize
here.
For that. Yes.
It's okay.
Thank you. Yeah, Whitey in for Damon today. Damon Radokolsky, 95.7 The Game. I apologize for that abruptness there. We're so looking forward to having Farhan Zaidi with us today at 5 o'clock. By the way, Ray, and I'm looking for it. I got to find it. Somebody at ESPN is writing ESPN MLB about how, you know what, somebody who's not supposed to make the playoffs this year in baseball is going to make the playoffs, possibly the Giants. Giants on that list. ESPN.com. I know you always tell me I'm so naive. I don't know what I'm talking about. Hope is, it's pointless to hope this year, but I'm not the only one looking at a potential miracle, last night's results notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Ratto, your thoughts?
Huh. Yeah, you're both wrong now.
Okay. Before we get on to baseball. Thank you. Yes, it does. That's one of the things I appreciate about you. Matt, I apologize.
You were ambiguity going forward.
Yeah. You were rudely interrupted as we went to break there, and you were nice enough to say, hey, we got a break here. We were talking about the college football season, whether there will be a college football season. It's hard for me to imagine, especially given the news today, Big Ten players following the Pac-12. They're forming a unity group to address concerns. What do you think? Are we going to have a college football season?
No, I don't think we are. And if we do, I think it's going to be in the spring, because I do not see how the organizations in charge, whether that's individual schools or conferences or the NCAA, are going to be able to satisfy students' health concerns in a month. It doesn't make any sense to me. And if these kids are serious and they hold to you know, the standards they're setting in these letters, I don't think those standards can be met in time to have a normal college football season. So, no, I don't think it's going to happen. And as reckless as conference commissioners and athletic directors might be willing to be, it seems that the players are not.
I think it's interesting, though, that the only two conferences that have sort of embraced this notion so far are players in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. I haven't heard anything from the SEC or the Big 12 or the ACC. And it may be that they may decide to go without, you know, if the Big Ten and Pac-10 can't field teams because of this, I don't think that's going to hold the other conferences from doing that, even if it means behaviors like what's allegedly going on at Colorado State. And, I mean, there might be individual schools that drop out, but I think there are at least three conferences that have so much money involved and do not have the same level of player activism that I think they might try to plow ahead. I don't know that they'll finish, but I think there are some conferences have a much higher threshold for the health dangers to other people than others. So I could easily see some starting, some not. I'd be surprised if everybody got through it.
Are you suggesting perhaps, Ray, that they'd be a lot more reckless than what we've seen from MLB and the NBA? That is, if players started getting sick, they would try to find a way to play college football anyway?
Well, at Colorado State, at least, there have been reports by players and staffers that they've been pressured to not report COVID symptoms and to practice even if they think they don't feel well. So, I mean, there's that.
I had not seen that. Wow.
Other places, I mean, I saw this the other day. One person sort of tested positive for COVID at Northwestern, and they shut down their practices. And yet there were 29 players at Illinois, and they were going along like nothing was happening.
But, I mean, so, I think that's Ray, I think can't we tie that directly to what happened with the 1,000 players saying they don't want to play? Because that's what happened with the Pac-12. Students talked to each other. They found the standards were radically different school to school. It became obvious no one was taking care of them, and they decided they wouldn't play. It seems to me that's exactly what happened in the Big Ten. And, boy, to your point, I'm sure similar things are happening in the SEC if they're happening at Colorado State. So let's see.
But that's
in
my
a
point.
Week,
it's just,
we
yeah.
might have player activism in those conferences as well.
Oh, we might. I mean, or the Pac-12 and Big Ten might collapse. We literally don't know because college sports every day is day to day. But my point is, if there are standards that are that radically different within the same conference, it tells me that the conferences really aren't monitoring those differences and that they're basically sort of, you know, letting this Lord of the Flies philosophy guide their either action or inaction.
And how close can we get to kickoff before they would have to make a decision on, hey, we're shutting down the season? I mean, if you're just going to have sporadic teams around the country that are going to try to play, how are you going to cobble together any schedules or anything?
Well, they're already conference only.
Schedules. Yeah, they've already done that. I mean, that some places have gone just 10-game all conference. The Big 12, I think, went to a 9 plus a non-league game because you can only play 9 games within conference because they only have 10 teams. And we also haven't heard much of anything from the Group of Five conferences. You know, the Conference USA, the Mountain West, Sun Belt, etc. So there literally is no standard, and I think that's one of the things that players have been bringing up. You know, what is the standard, and why won't you tell us what it is? Because it's not only different conference to conference, but team to team, and that's madness.
Yeah, and I think we've seen, at least in the Northwestern and Stanford and Cal cases, there almost seems to be a better schools have better safety precautions situation going on. And that, to me, is extremely disturbing.
Well, but Rutgers, which does not have that same lofty reputation, they, you know, they shut it down pretty quickly.
Yeah, they're not Northwestern.
The University of Connecticut today announced they weren't going to play at all this year. So now some of that was because they didn't have a lot of money at risk and probably will make more money not playing football than playing football. But I don't think it's entirely, you know, A plus B equals C to say that the smart schools are being more mindful than the, quote, dumb ones.
It's not entirely, but it's a definite trend, Ray. The Ivy League has shut down. Stanford and Cal are at the forefront of the Pac-12. Northwestern is at the forefront of the Big Ten.
That's a good point.
If anything happens in the SEC, I guarantee it's Vanderbilt. I'm not. This is not imaginary. It's not the only thing going on, but it's definitely a factor, and that it should not be a factor.
Well,
from the 415
but...
on the text line, Ray, Boise State wants to have season ticket holders and family in the stands. I haven't confirmed that. But, again, that's from the 415 here on the text line. Look, they have online learning. We know that. There are some wonderful simulations out there. It's time for online college football. Just have this school play that school. Everything's done online. It's the only maybe the only solution, as stupid as that sounds.
There's not a good NCAA football
that
game anymore.
Part,
I don't
it
think.
Really is as stupid as it sounds. But but going back to Matt's point, Duke's an elite university. They haven't done this yet. Michigan's an elite university. They haven't done it yet.
Ohio State is not an elite.
Yeah, it's – I just –
hold on. Ohio State and Michigan are not universities like the other ones I was talking about. They're just not. And I'm not, again, saying that you can draw a direct line and every school that has a certain academic standard is – doing this right, and every school that doesn't is not. But I don't think you can ignore the pattern. That is part of what has happened here.
Well, I can't imagine they're going to play, but I couldn't imagine that we would have come this far and that playing would still be a possibility on the 5th of August. So 'tis sheer madness. We'll see where it ends up. Whitey in for Damon today. As we mentioned, Farhan is going to be on at 5 o'clock today. If you have a question that you'd like us to ask Farhan, let us know what it is, 888-957-9570. The Giants falling to the Rockies last night, 5-2. Three more errors. Now, certainly that's not Farhan's fault, not Kapler's fault. Three more errors. The Giants have made 16 errors already. What is going on? A team with very little margin for error, you've got to catch the ball, right? You've got to throw the ball to who you're trying to throw it to if you're going to have any chance. What's going on?
What's going on is they don't have very many good defensive players right now. What's also going on is because they, I think, are trotting out lineups in search of offense rather than defense and pitching, you're going to see more risk-taking, like putting Alex Dickerson out in right field. And also, I think there may be, and we can ask Farhan this as well, that there is sort of an underlying philosophy that this is a year to continue the teardown. And before the redeployment of resources happens in 2021. I mean, they may not view 2020 as importantly as maybe their fans do. Because he was tasked with coming in and basically changing everything about the baseball operations department. He got to change some things last year. He's changing more things this year. But a rebuild of this size isn't done in 2 years. And so I think they've seen the liabilities of having good bursts of baseball in a bad year. It happened in 16. It happened again last year when they had the tremendous July and then went back in the can in August and September. I think they're adhering to a big picture strategy that does not include 2020 as a breakout year.
How does that hurt the defense, though?
Well, it determines how you approach everyday roster construction, how you deal with the lineup. They don't have a lot of players. They are trying to restock a minor league system that only now is showing signs of rejuvenation. But that takes several years because, you know, Marco Luciano, you know, he's 3 years away, period. You know, Joey Bart is clearly at least 1 year away in their worldview. They may bring him up later, but I'd be surprised at this point if they do. I think they're viewing 2021 as the year when they start really integrating the young guys they have a fondness for into the everyday operation of the big league roster. That's how it affects the defense, and it affects everything else they do because they don't have enough bodies to turn everything over right now.
Yeah, it's a reflection of where they are. And by the way, you mentioned Dickerson playing right field. You know, the ball that went off his glove was actually scored a triple. A little Colorado hometown scorekeeping, although he obviously got charged for an error on a throw later on. But here's what's unacceptable. You're going to have guys making errors. Like last night, Crawford made an error. Okay, well, we know that he's a gold glove caliber shortstop, so that's baseball. But Tyler Heineman has had, what is it, three now?
Three.
Tyler Heineman has had three catcher's interferences. That's just not acceptable from a major league catcher. Now, maybe with Buster opting out when he did, they were behind the eight ball a little bit, but that's not major league baseball. And he's done some nice things. His batting average, I think, his on base is decent, but three catcher's interferences? No, that can't happen at this level.
And Chadwick Trump has made several mistakes as well, which begs the question, why not let Joey Bart make those mistakes? I mean, if
before
we're just
we
going to have
that.
Catchers making mistakes.
Well, the answer coming up. Excuse me, one moment, Ray. I apologize. We'll have the answer in just a moment. First, I want to welcome you to your 4 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
And that certainly is one of the things we'll have to ask Farhan about when he joins us today at 5. Hey, where's Joey Bart? But Ray, if you've got a catcher, and you do, a catcher who's committed three catcher's interferences already, why not Joey Bart and why not now?
Because they clearly feel, based on their behavior to date, that Joey Bart is not yet ready to look at major league pitching or catch major league pitching yet. I mean, that's a choice they've made. I mean, the idea that, hey, this isn't working out, let's just bring up our best guy even if we don't think he's ready, is not a thing that baseball teams do anymore. They don't sort of roll the dice like that just because fans are impatient. I mean, again, Farhan was brought in to make a macro change in everything baseball. He's had a little more than a year to implement that. And that's not enough to make this team a competent plus-level major league team yet. So I think he's being very careful with Bart. And I think he's being very careful with Ramos. Because I don't think he views this year as the year to use them. And whatever the daily frustrations may be, they, in their minds, don't stack up to being, you know, burdensome enough to change what their plan was going to be.
Yeah, to me, it just doesn't make sense. I agree with Ray that is the strategy and that's how they're thinking about it. But the way I think about it is, if we're really talking about the difference between August of...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.